What are some of the sounds that you think of as distinctly Uberzone sounds? Like when someone hears a track, do you think that they'll be able to identify it immediately as Uberzone? I think you can do that with some electronic artists. You know immediately, oh, this is Crystal Method, or this is...
I've always been told that, and I always like to think it's not because all my songs sound the same.
Well, I'm sure they don't. I think
sometimes wonder that. It's like, God, I hope it's not because...
But you can recognize a hard floor track within 30 seconds of a song, because there's a sound that they always use that
those
nobody else seems to use
were,
all the time.
Yeah, and they were like, I think, and still are the masters of being able to take minimal elements and do things that were totally interesting with them. You know what I mean? Give them a 909, an SH-101, a TB-303, and they can make a two-hour track that never gets boring. And that in of itself is talent. I mean, that's really hard to do. And probably because my stuff, I think, tends to be deceptively minimal, because I'll use a lot of elements that just augment already existing elements, but they're massively, massively subtle. You know, like, I'll track my effects, for instance, and I'll have, like, a bass line with a chorus track, a room track, a tape delay track, and some parts only get flown in at certain parts, you know, to cause maybe some dimensional changes, or just to a track to get bigger at one point. And to the average listener, that stuff might go unnoticed. But I guess if I had to pick a few things, I'd say the rhythm, because, you know, one big, big difference, too, I think, is the fact that I really don't write loop-based. So if you're not writing loop-based, you're picking all the elements yourself, from the kick drum to the snare drum to the hi-hats to whatever, so... it gives you more of an opportunity to kind of showcase the specific sound set that you would choose.
So you don't just go to like a list of beats and start off with a beat. You actually construct everyone and every element of everyone.
Every element, bass line, loop, you know, like everything you hear that sounds like a loop, like hi-hats, whatever. Those are all like 16-bar, 4-bar loops that I create, either offline or within the realm of the track. And then, you know, they may recur in the song, so there definitely are, you know, loop-based elements, but they're all created from scratch. So when you do that, I think, though, you know, you have tendencies to go like, ooh, I like this kind of kick, you know, and you'll hear people that like a real knocky kicks. There's people that like this sort of kick.
Right.
So you break it down to those elements and you add those things all up, you sort of achieve, you know, a real broad spectrum of the specific personality traits that you have and what your instrumentation selection will be and the type of synthesizers that you lean towards. I like, you know, high-pass filtery sounds for, like acid tracks on the top or whatever, so you might hear the Jupiter 6 a lot or something with the multi-mode filter. You know, so there's different things like that you'll kind of pick off. And, I mean, that's probably the coolest compliment you can get as an electronic musician, not having vocals in there. So if somebody comes up and goes, I heard the track in the store and I knew it was you, you know? And like I said earlier, you hope it's not because it sounds like your last single, but it's something where you've got enough, you know, personality integrated in the track where they can really pick up on it. You feel like that's a pretty big achievement with no vocals.
What about samples and using samples as an instrument?
I would love to be able to use samples, and back when it was not such a pain in the neck. I mean, because I just think you can do some really cool and interesting things with samples, but I just totally stay away from them now because it's just such a nightmare. I mean, it's...
You mean like getting permission
getting
to use
clearance
certain...
Is just, it's ridiculous. It's just so expensive and
but
it's just,
not necessarily... licensable samples or full vocal samples, but maybe just like you know, a laugh here or an animal sound or something like that. Do you like to take elements that are outside of your computer and bring them in?
Oh, absolutely, definitely. I mean, any kind of, you know, I mean, I'll record like human voices, for instance. This is a track that I brought with me. It's called M87 Black Hole, and it's kind of a dub track, kind of pretty. It's not really something that would be a typical Uberzone track. And that was the one I was telling you, I don't know whether or not it's going to make it onto Ideology, but it'll definitely be available for download for people that are interested in some of the aspects of, like, when I'm in the studio working and the stuff that I write that I'm, you know, writing maybe with the intention of using on an Uberzone record, but maybe the last minute I just go, I think it might be a little bit of a stretch, you know? I still want people to be able to have those if they want them, so I've decided to put those tracks all up online when the record comes out, and then people that really want the kind of physical Uberzone record where it's just sort of what I think would have worked on the record, they'll have that, and the online downloadable things will have all the obscurities and down-tempo things. Anyway, with that track, I had kind of this concept. I had this line that was from a documentary I heard that was, because it's a sort of a trippy track about black holes and universe and just sort of all the mysteries that can kind of entail. But it's, there are more stars in the universe than there are words ever spoken by every human who ever existed.
Nice.
So it was this line, and I thought, oh, that's cool, and it would really work with the vibe of this track. But I didn't want just a person sort of saying that line, no matter how cool the voice was. So I had, like, 16 different people come into the studio and say the same line, and then in the track I chopped it up. I had them say it with the same, you know, the same sort of
rhythm. And they used all their voices.
Yeah, it had same with the same sort of rhythmic, well, approximately close. And then I cut up the pieces and time stretched them to where it sounds like a sentence, but it's each word is a different person saying it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it sounds really heady, you know, it's just freaky sounding. And I bent some of the voices, so it sounds kind of trippy, you know. But like samples, when you use them in this sort of regard like that, it's not in the track yet, but I brought it without that part in it. But when you do something like that, where you're recording a sample that you're going to use in a track, sometimes you have to really work to sort of make it sound like it kind of fits in the track. There's some esoteric angle that a sample can bring that sounds so obscure and sort of otherworldly because the inflection and the way that the word might have been said or something was totally out of context to the song. So by virtue of those facts, it makes it sound really interesting. But the minute you say it into a mic really plain, it just sounds lame and predictable, you know.
Talk to me about remixing other artists' work and what your responsibilities are. I mean, you've mm-hmm. remixed some well-known artists, Sarah McLachlan, BT. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that process. How do you get that project in the first place, and then what do you feel you're supposed to do with it?
A lot of the time, you know, people, either the artist or the label, will hear your tracks and they'll go, wow, I think it'd be really cool sound clash to mix these two artists together to hear what this person would do with this kind of person's vocal track or whatever. When I do remixes, I start with a very sort of respectable angle. Not respectable angle, but I start with a lot of respect for the artist that I'm going to remix. So first things first, when I hear the track, if I really don't feel like I can bring something interesting to the table, I'll sort of say it up front. I'll say, I don't know if I can really do much with this because maybe I'm just not feeling it, or I'm not coming up with any kind of an idea for the track. So there's been those instances. But when I'm listening to the track, and when I kind of have that initial conversation with the people that are commissioning me, I sort of will ask, you know, are you looking for something that you kind of hope will work on the dance floor? Because if you are, I've got this great idea. You know, I mm-hmm. think the vocal could work really cool in this sort of a light, you know. And also there's the technical factors, the speed of the track, and if it's really, really down tempo, it's more difficult to try and make it into an up-tempo track. And then you have to have the inevitable conversation with the artist if it's a full vocal track where you might not want to use all the vocals. You just want to use small amounts. So I like to get that stuff out of the way first because it can tend to be a political thing at the end of the process that can be aggravating. You know, because you have a vision about a track and just the bridge section of the vocal works, it might make a really cool, interesting track, but sometimes the artist will be really offended if you didn't use the verses and the choruses right. and all the other parts. So you have to kind of handle it with kid gloves from the beginning. But it really is a process of listening to the track, finding the elements in the track that you think are interesting, that would work synergistically with the production ideas that you have, and then just the feeling that you have as to whether or not you can do something really interesting with it.
Is it a challenge when you remix a track by a well-known artist? You spend a lot of time on it, so you develop a sense of ownership. It's mm-hmm. this is an Uberzone song, mm-hmm. even though it's a remix of someone else's work. But in the end, is it more their song than yours? I mean, can you never really take full credit for it. Is that a challenge as an artist?
Well, believe it or not, I've had it from one total extreme to the other. Like, when I did the Sarah McLachlan remix, I like Sarah McLachlan's voice so much, and she's got such a great voice that it was almost like, to me, it was the obvious thing I had to do was figure out a way to use the voice and make it work within.
If I could just say, as a folk artist, Sarah McLachlan has reached out to more electronica masters than
seriously.
Anybody.
Yeah, totally. Well, part of the reason is there's this guy, George Maniatis, that's at Network Records, and he's really kind of a visionary guy, and he's got a really cool artistic sensibility and open mind, and I think he's sort of, you know, instigated a lot of that.
That's great.
So he's a really cool cat. But so I've had remixes like that where it was the full vocal, and then when I listen back at that, now I did that quite a while ago, but to me that was a pretty big achievement because it's hard to use a full vocal and then have it still work on the floor. But then there's been those tracks where artists have given me like three sounds and like not the original track and said, uh-huh. I want a remix of this. So you wind up writing an entire track and maybe using one of the three sounds,
and
it's
really
just an
Uberzone
track.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of ludicrous. And I, to be honest with you, I steer clear of that stuff because I've been burned so bad a couple times in the past with that sort of thing.
So. Why don't we jump into another song, because I don't want us to run out of time and not get used to play some of the things that you brought
you
in.
Do you want something down-tempo and trippy, or you want another?
Yeah, we could try something different.
Okay, do the last idea. I think it's six on that CD there.
All right. And what are we about to hear?
This is the one I was saying might not make it on the record, but it'll be available at some point. It's kind of a dubby, pretty track. It's called M87, and then the second part's called Black Hole.
My guest is Uberzone. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Zone on Is Good on killradio.org. Listening to Uberzone on Is Good on killradio.org. is good on killradio.org. My guest is UberZone. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Q, what was the song? I'm guessing it was The Freaks as a guess. I don't know. But what was the song that made you go from just a guy making music to UberZone, to someone that, you know, people recognize and remember?
There were basically two, definitely. The first one would have been Bots. That was the first record I released. That was the one where, you know, I did it. It was the first record I put out on City of Angels. And when that record came out, it was the fall of 95, and I was just like praying that it would sell 2,000 copies, you know, because I just wanted it to come. I was just so cool at that point to have a record coming out. And it came out, it was out for a few months, and I remember calling City of Angels all the time going, how's it doing? Is it doing okay? And they're like, yeah, it's doing really good. But
well, how did you get that representation? I mean, about distribution.
I started getting a little depressed because it came out in October, and it wasn't until like January, February that I started getting a lot of the feedback. And then by March, that record, They couldn't keep it in stock. They were selling it by the boxes, like, to stores. And it was like stores, you know, now they buy onesie, twosie. Their stores were buying, like, two boxes, which is 50 records to a box, like little DJ stores. So once people from stores started getting a hold of me through the email, because I put the email in the back and saying, I just ordered two boxes of your records. It was flipping me out because I had no idea, you know. But there was a moment where right after that all kind of blew up, I did my very first live UberZone show. And it was, and I'd never really played live, let alone travel out of my area to play live. And I hadn't played live in Southern California, which is where I'm from. My first show was actually in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, this club called The Edge. And it was also kind of, you know, I've been to a million big shows and like parties and, you know, quote unquote raves, whatever, you know, back in the day. But it was the first time I'd been somewhere kind of out of state going, and it was just a trippy scene. You know, it was a club that would start at 9 at night, and like Third Eye Blind played from 9 to 12, and then the club closes down for a couple hours and reopens at 2 in the morning and then goes till 12 noon the next day. So my time slot was like 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, my.
So I'm like,
oh my God.
I'm thinking in my head, no one's going to be there, and blah, blah, blah. I get there, and, you know, and it's just like total craziness, mayhem, like thousands of people on the street. There's like 3,500 people club capacity at this place, and it smashed it. You know, people getting there at 3 in the morning in a line around the corner. And anyway, I had to play, and I was totally mortified, you know, and I had Bots and a few of my first singles, and then I had written a couple of the tracks to play live. And back then, my set was all sequenced with like an MC500 sequencer, and I had all these CV gate devices, like an SH101, and, you know, CV gate out of the TB303 into the SH101, and that was getting a DIN sync from a Roland convert, you know, MIDI to, you know, Roland sync converter. You know, a lot of things that could go wrong.
Right.
Samplers that were downloading banks as they're playing other banks, and it was, you know, I remember like setting it up in my hotel room and like practicing like a half hour before I had to go over to the venue to do sound check, because I want to make sure everything worked cool, you know, anything through the flight. But at any rate, I played the show, and that was like the point where it really tripped me out, because here I was 2,500 miles away, first live show playing in front of 3,500 people. It was like the acid test, literally. You know, it was, you know, definitely you
wow.
fall hard or you know, you nail it. But the show went really well. And the crowd, like, flipped out. They just totally, I had, like, the whole room that just that feeling.
And none of them were really were familiar with your music, yeah, except for that one song.
They were, yeah. They all knew the single. So, like, as I was playing the set, then the single came on, and then the club went crazy, and it freaked me out, because it was, like, the first time I recognized the power of music. You know, it was, like, that moment. It was, like, I can put a record out and then fly 2,500 miles and have 3,000 people going insane, you know? And they're, like, they had this fence. It was on the front of the stage, and like kids were climbing up on the fence, and it was just that was the minute that I really felt like, wow, this is something that could really work, you know. So anyway, that was one kind of turning point. And then the other one definitely was the Freaks. Just at that point, when that record came out, it was a kind of similar thing. They couldn't press enough of them, and the CD of that, the CD single of that, also sold really well. So it kind of moved in, you know, to the listening audience and just away from the club at that point too.
So was it DJs that essentially raised you up then?
Started with the DJs, definitely, and then once the kids heard it in the clubs and on the mixtapes and wherever else they were hearing the music be represented at that point, they started trying to find it in whatever format they could. So I eventually did the Space Cadet EP, which had all the first few, you know, Bots and The Brain and all those, Moondust, all those tracks on it. So once that CD came out, you know, the person that would be going to a club that wasn't a DJ that bought vinyl could actually go out and get those tracks, and that sold really well. And then the Freaks came out and kind of came out on CD. So after the Freaks, yeah, that's when the remixes really, really, really just rolled in like mad, you know, after that record.
So where do you see Uberzone going? We were talking a little bit before the show about the directions that some artists can take, becoming super famous, being on MTV all the time, on the cover of magazines, and things like that.
Yeah.
But you consider yourself to be still an underground artist, musician. How wildly successful can the Uberzone project get before it becomes something other than your idea?
Well, the funny thing about it, I guess, is that when you first start out, you think about those kind of things. But as you evolve in your career, you just sort of, you try and find the things about it that are the most important things to you. And you have to, a lot of time you have to do things to figure out whether or not it's right for you. And after I did the Freaks and I went through that whole kind of thing, I had an unfortunate bad split from my initial label, City of Angels. So I was sort of extricated in this, or as I was entangled, I should say, in this huge legal mess until I got to the Astroworks deal. But by that point, I'd already been working on the debut record for so long that there were just a lot of things stewing. There were a lot of hands in the pot and new managers and business managers and all of that sort of thing. So I kind of got caught up in the major record business. And, you know, they're good people and stuff, but just that whole procedure and the way that all worked just wasn't for me. And I felt like I just wasn't really ever in sync with what my that whole process wasn't in sync with what my original intentions were for the project, which was to really, really try and write music that I was inspired by and that I really loved. There's that sort of thing that happens when you get caught up in that, in particular if you're a solo artist and you don't have the confirmation of another bandmate or somebody there to say what you're doing is right, or let me give you some support about, you know, go with your true intentions. You have a lot of people from the labels and, you know, A&R people and whatever coming at you from a lot of different angles, bringing different people into the fold. And at one point, I think you might lose a little focus. And for me to be able to maintain focus and know specifically what I want to do, I sort of have to have that micromanagement system in place. So after I sort of came out of that whole thing, the intention was to really grab back hold of the project and kind of return it to its roots, which were me in the studio with my keyboards doing stuff that inspired me. And I'll figure out a way to get it to the people, and, you know, I'll support it by going out playing shows. So that's where I'm at, and I'm getting ready now. I've been working on this new album, Ideology. Some of these tracks, like we were saying earlier, are potentially going to be off that record.
And Faith in the Future is available pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, as is the digital mix, which was the mix CD I did after Faith in the Future, and the Y4K mix CD that came out on Distinctive Bricks.
Those are great. All those Y4K CDs are great. They take really interesting artists, and have them do really good mixes.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do.
Because I think Hybrid did one.
Yeah, Hybrid's done it, and Teo, and quite a few people. New Breed, I think, did one, and Ills, and Evil Nine. But the new record's going to be, it's going to be basically done in the next couple months, and it was supposed to come out in the spring, but the reason why I ended up delaying it till next spring is because I did start off on that tangent writing a lot of songs, and then sort of realized I really want this to be a pure Uberzone record, and I feel like some of the songs might not have really worked in that context, so I decided to remix them into a format that sounded more like an Uberzone track, so that there was sort of a cohesiveness or consistency throughout the record that tied it all together and sounded like it was coming from the same place. So I'm finishing that up, and the other thing, the reason why I kind of decided to wait is I'm starting an imprint called Equation.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Equation.
So it was sort of a decision to say, well, maybe I'll just kind of wait and be able to release it all in Equation and maintain ownership of the masters that way, so I don't have to kind of get caught up with
so that'll be like your own label.
Yep, and all the new Uberzone stuff will be coming out on that, and then eventually next year I'll start listening to other people's tracks to potentially release on Equation. So it'll be, you know, download, there'll be some vinyl, limited vinyl, and then CD at the end of the whole thing for the Ideology record. And then a lot of alternative tracks that are going to come out that would have gone on the record, but maybe just didn't quite fit with the, as I said earlier, to make the record sound cohesive. And then, in addition to all of this stuff, because I will have the whole online thing set up, a lot of tracks that hadn't been released in the past, like Snizzle and Trapezoid and Moondust, Dark Side of the Moon and Kung Fu and all these tracks that have been on some of these mix CDs, those are going to all be available via download too. So
wow, that's great. Yeah. Well, I could continue talking to you probably for another hour. I certainly have more questions, but unfortunately we're running out of time. So I want to first ask you where people can get more information on you, on the web or elsewhere.
Well, right now, as is everybody, I'm on the MySpace thing going. You know, it's probably the best place to find out what's new, because my website, which is uberzone.net, is right now in the process of being rebuilt behind the scenes. So that will launch in the next month or two as well. But it's myspace.com/uberzone/dropthetone. And if you can't remember that, you can just do a search under the music search function on MySpace, and I think I'm the only one on there.
What does that mean, drop the tone?
That's from the track I did with Afrika Bambaataa, Too Cool for School.
Uh-huh.
And it was a line out of the track, Afrika Bambaataa says, Uberzone, drop the tone at the beginning. So it became like sort of a thing where Adam and all my friends and my neighbors, Rennie and all these guys, can tease me, and Simply Jeff, you know, that's been like the thing that
they've
never let me live down. So it's kind of like the funny moniker that the funny catchphrase that I used.
What does Uberzone mean?
It means overzone, or like the upper zone.
Why is that the name for your project?
Well, one, initially it was sort of, you know, being a guy from Southern California, I wanted something that sounded a little more exotic and interesting than Dude. You know, I don't know what else I could call the project.
Guest is Dude.
Yeah.
I like that.
The Dude, right?
Yeah.
The Dude Abides. The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
But I liked the way that it looked graphically, and it sort of sounded, you know, a little, like I said, exotic and different. And it was sort of an ode to Kraftwerk. And then also, I liked the sort of connotation of it. It could mean like atmosphere, or like, I don't know, heaven or something, where it was just sort of had this really kind of cool netherworld sound to it. And then also, I mean, I did have a few other potential names, and I wrote everything down on a piece of paper, and I just sort of showed them to people randomly, and everybody really gravitated towards that name. So it just seemed like a no-brainer.
Well, Q, thank you so much for coming in and for sharing your music. Certainly looking forward to the new album. And you're going to be playing
Definitely.
Tomorrow.
That's one big thing I want to talk about at Avalon. So Hyper and myself and Rob Tronic are going to be playing. I'm playing live tomorrow with Davey Dave, and I'll be playing a lot of the new tracks off the new record. So come check that out. It's, what is that, on Hollywood and Vine?
Yeah, Avalon,
in front of me. But yeah, Club Avalon. So I think it's clubavalon.com. And the information's also on my MySpace page, so people can check out the details there.
Yeah, and I also noticed on your MySpace page that immediately after that, you're going to be going all over the place.
Yeah, I'm just continuing my touring, going to play in, Atlantic City, and then I have a crazy one where I play Fabric in London on Friday night, and then I come back here to L.A. to play Nocturnal Wonderland on Saturday night.
Wow.
live back-to-back.
Well, so that's it, though. I mean, you're working artist. Is this, I mean, are you... How do you feel, we'll leave on this note, like the situation that Uberzone is in right now, with an album on the way, with lots of gigs, with a strong following? How do you feel as an artist?
Ironically, it's the best position I've ever been in my career, because I have autonomy, for one. For two, I have the ability to do what I want to do without having anybody else impose their will on me. Which is a great feeling for an independent guy.
Which is a musician's
like me.
Dream. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I hear that with many guests.
And I feel really blessed and fortunate, because it's a really tough musical world out there right now. I mean, people are really struggling, and I'm lucky to have the gigs and have the support of all the people that have, you know, really helped me out by buying the records and listening to the tracks all these years. So I owe it all to them.
What track should we say goodbye with?
Vibrate, track two. It's going to be one of the other tracks on the new single.
My guest has been Uberzone, and if you're listening live and you know someone who wants to hear this, or if you want to hear it again, it will be available for download. Go to myspace.com/thisisgood sometime later today, and it will be up. And also check out myspace.com/uberzone/dropthetone and uberzone.net coming soon. Thanks for listening.
We'll be right back.